Hey everybody, Mike Jeffers, and welcome to another episode of Open Mic. We are here with Buddy Guys, and we are doing some preview interviews with artists that are performing on the Chicago Blues Fest. And today, I'm very excited, we have Cheryl Youngblood joining us. You have a great bio on your website, but also at the bottom of it, it says, you want to leave people, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but it's something like, you want to touch everyone, as many as possible through your music,
yes.
Right? And leave them in a better place after they see you perform, even if it's only for an hour, which it would be on the Blues Fest. Is that something when you were coming up, is that something that was ingrained in you by your parents or by people that raised you as you were coming up? Because it's such a great say. It's such a great kind of mission statement for you. And I haven't seen that on a lot of artists' websites, but I'm pretty sure that a lot of them really want that to happen. But I'm glad you said that on your site. So talk a little bit about that saying.
My background stems from gospel. I was brought up in the church. And when people say, you're going to force your child to into religion, you're going to force... No, it's not about that. It's about being brought up in the right path so that when you fall, you have something to fall back on. So my history comes from gospel and gospel music. In terms of making people feel a certain way, you know, people deal with things every day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know, you never know, even though a person is smiling, you never know what they're feeling or what they're going through. So if I can just make somebody smile or touch somebody, even just for a few minutes, then I've made a difference. And that's where that comes from. It comes from making a difference. You can be, and I love my church, I love the church, being in the church. But you can be in the church all you want to. But there are 50,000 people out there that I can basically touch from the stage, just making them feel like they're important and making them feel like they matter. Because they do.
Did that help, that thought process help you as you were starting to learn how to sing and starting to get into different genres? Because, you know, I mean, it can be somewhat brutal when you're learning stuff, when you're going through things, but having that positive attitude all the time, a lot of artists get beat up along the way, right? And a lot of people fail, which is a great way to get better, is the way I always think about
it.
You know, if you're not failing, you don't know what you need to work on to get better. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. But as you were coming up, it sounds like that was instilled in you maybe through the church, but then even when you were branching out into other genres or getting interested in other things, you brought that same mission to all of your creativity, right?
Yeah, I did. Being brought up in the church is one is a way to be in front of people, you know, and you have the opportunity to do different things like be in plays. And my church, Mount Zion Baptist Church, is where I came from. And we had people who wrote plays. We did plays in the church. We did youth Sunbeam choir. So I started at 5 years old.
Wow.
And we had the Sunbeam Choir. Miss Ida Mae Richards, baby. Her favorite color was red. That's my favorite color, too. But she was over our Sunbeam Choir. Sunbeam Choir was from the age of 5 to 11 or 13. Going way back, I can't remember. But so I had the opportunity to... My mother was a musician and a singer. And she had her own gospel group called the Royal Harmonettes. So... My mother being a musician in the church, of course, I was going to sing it in the Sunbeam Choir.
Yeah.
So at 5 years old, I was in the choir, and my first song was Jesus Loves Me, This I Know. So with that, you start to see how you can touch people. But I didn't know that music was what I really wanted to do. Even at the age of 14 or 15, singing in the church, they would be like, well, you... I'm going to buy your CD. That scared me. Because like you said, the people in the limelight or in the screen, or they could really be hurt by what people say. Even though people don't know them, they could go through a lot of different things, which would make them either crawl up in a shell or come out swinging.
Yep.
So with music, you can come out swinging. And with music, you can still... help someone along the way. So as far as being in the church, yeah, that's where it was instilled. I would have to say that.
Yeah.
That is where it was instilled. All of this was really instilled in the church.
All right, so you're in the church, you're coming up, you're singing, and you're not sure if you're going to play professionally or not. I mean, you're 15, right? Everybody might want to, might not, but you're in kind of in that, you're obviously performing a lot, learning the craft, probably influenced by a lot of different people at that point. How did you get involved with the gospel group, you know, Reverend Milton Brunson and the Thompson Community Singers of Chicago, better known as the Tommies? Yeah. Won a Grammy?
Oh, my God, yes.
A Stella Award?
Yes.
How old were you then?
I was 25, between 25 okay. and 30. So I stayed with the Thompson Community Singers for about 17 years. Well, after Reverend Brunson died, because that was my heart, you know. He was so stern. He was, oh, my God.
How did you get in the group to begin with?
Well, I was, okay. So at 15, I had my own female group called Sisters. And we would perform in at my home church and different things like that. And then somebody mentioned to me that I should go in and check out, you know, one of their CERT programs. Mm-hmm. So I went and checked it out. I said, okay. And then they said, okay, you like it? I said, yeah. And they said, okay, you need to audition. I said, who? the fear struck all through my heart. But I ended up, long story short, I did end up going and auditioning for the group, and immediately, by the grace of God, they was like, well, you'll get your letter, but you're in. Wow. You know, you sit right over there. And I was like, okay, well, thank God for that. And I got to meet a lot of different people and you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's technically how I got involved with the Tommies. But once a Tommy, always a Tommy. I love them dearly. I have my own schedule, so I'm not able to come back and do a lot of the things that they do. But
right.
I still love them dearly. And having a grand, my guitarist, he always mentions Grammy Award winning. I would love to do that all with my own.
Yeah, well, hey.
With my own name. However, I'm honored to be a part of a group that has lasted for forever, as far as I know.
Yeah.
And they did finally win a Stella while I was in the group. They won a Stella, two Stella Awards and a Grammy Award.
Wow.
So he was like, hey, you were with them, right? You song, right? I said, yeah, I saw it. Hey, you know, it is what it is. So I said, okay.
What how did you start playing professionally, leading your own group? You know, getting into the blues, leading your own group, because I'm hearing a lot of gospel, I'm hearing a lot of church, I'm hearing a lot of organized things, but when you go out, and you're not even a side person, you have been, I know, but leading the Cheryl Youngblood band is different than getting a call to be in a group or to go play with somebody else, right? I mean, that's a whole other, you're running a business at that point,
yes.
And you're in charge.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you that. Initially, I had my own female group, musicians, mm-hmm. called Ultimately Blessed. Besides my female group called Sisters, I was only 15. I was in my home church with Sisters. I developed Ultimately Blessed, which was a female band that I played drums and sung with. And at the same time, I was working with Bobby Slim James, Root Doctor. I don't know if you've heard of Roy Hightower. Mm-hmm. His name is Doc Root now.
Okay.
Dr. Root. He actually brought me on the scene. Drummer Oscar Seaton was at my house like every other day. Bad drummer. He plays for everybody now.
Mm-hmm.
Lionel Richie, George Benson, you name it. He plays with everybody. So he wanted to, he was at my house one day and he said, well, I want to go to California. So he went to California. He said, but in the meantime, I need you to cover my gigs with a blues artist. So your question was, how did I get into doing the blues? So Root Doctor brought me on as his drummer because I was covering for Oscar Seaton.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I played with Root Doctor for, actually, I have a gig with him in July.
Oh,
yeah. So I played with him for a period of time, almost, I'd say 9 or 10 years. And then I played for Bobby Slim James, who physically brought his van to Joliet, Illinois, and moved me to Chicago.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I played with, and that night he moved me, we had a blues gig. So I didn't sing with them. I just play drums. I would do some little background here, little background there. And then I played for, still doing the gospel, had a chance to, through Humvee Entertainment, had a chance to play for Yolanda Adams and Daryl Coley. Daryl was so sweet. I mean, they're both so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is still, I'm still in the Thompson Community Singers. So.
So you're right in that. You got all sorts of stuff
going on
right now.
I'm still in the gospel, but I'm still
right
doing
now.
Blues. I'm still doing yeah. R&B. And then while I had my own female band called Ultimately Blessed, I developed another band for a dance band called Say Yes.
Just to play other gigs, probably,
just to
right?
play other gigs, yeah, right, because I needed to keep working.
Right.
Plus, at the time, I was working a full-time job. So,
That's what happens.
Yeah, yeah. So, in that, I was playing, I had my own dance band called Say Yes. We did a lot of the casinos and ultimate dance music.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I still had, over here, Ultimately Blessed, so we did benefits for breast cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes. We did every year we would do two or three benefits where all the proceeds would go to one of those
organizations.
So I still kept Ultimately Blessed around, and I still had Say Yes. But then 2013, I decided, okay, I play with everybody in the blues,
mm-hmm.
being Artie Blues Boy White's drummer. Was for he's, God rest his soul, but he was one of the sweetest guys. I mean, all of them were sweet,
sure.
but he was one of the sweetest guys. You know, he cracked a lot of jokes on me. But it was cool. He was stern, too. So here I got gospel sternness with Reverend Milton Bronson.
Right.
And I got blues sternness with Artie Blues Boy White and Floyd Taylor, Johnny Taylor's son.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. I was doing background singing with them. And so they was like, well, why don't you sing? You need to sing.
Yeah.
Okay, Cheryl, sing a couple of songs. I'm like, oh, you know. So I was already playing drums and singing in church. I was already playing drums and singing for Ultimately Blessed. I was already playing drums and singing for my dance band. So I said, well, okay, you know, I'll do it. So then one day I got up from the drums. And you feel closer to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing for me to be on the drums, because you know the drums are always, you're a drummer.
I know.
Where are we always?
In the back.
In the back.
In the back. And there's a barricade because the drums are between us and anything else happening.
Yeah. And then you got musicians standing in front of you, moving in front
of course.
Of you. So, you know, somebody asked me, would you get up and sing? Well, we love your playing, but we still want you to get up and sing. So I put some tracks on to run drum tracks. And I got up and sang up front. And the feeling was a whole world different. It was a world of difference.
Yeah.
So I was like, wow. So that feeling kind of got in me. I said, I wonder if I could do this. And I just, you know, by the grace of God, I just did it.
Yeah. Well, and you were already singing backups. So you knew, I mean, you knew harmonies and everything else. And you knew all the words to things
harmony.
And all that. Oh, man, so do I. I mean,
that's
something that I love seeing. A good R&B, blues, soul, and they're like three, four people in the band are doing harmonies.
I love
Sign me up.
That. Yeah. It makes a whole, it fills it up so much. So much. I've done so many songs by myself
mm-hmm.
with no background because let's keep it real.
Right.
A lot of our bands, we don't get paid enough to have background singers.
Right.
I don't want anybody saying, I just want to sing with you. And I can't give them something.
Right.
I'd rather say, you know, I would love to, and I know you want to do it for free, but if I can't pay you, I'd rather, you know, just not do it. Because I don't want, on the back end of it, I don't want nobody going saying, well, I did this for her and she.
Because that eventually happens.
You know, unfortunately,
right.
it happens.
Right.
So I wish that a lot of the venues would pay more, but I understand, especially since COVID, everybody's going through something.
It's economics.
Everybody's going through something. Yeah. It's economics. So with that, we don't have a lot of chance to do a whole lot of harmony. I try to make, if I hear one of my musicians sing, You're getting a mic. You get a mic and you get a mic and you get a mic. Everybody gets a mic. But that's what makes the sound, you know, makes it sound so wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
If everybody's having a good time, if we're having a good time on the stage, then they're going to have a good time in the audience.
That's it.
And that's the epitome of doing music.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about how you started playing drums. Because we jumped over that part, which we understood. I know about your singing and getting used to all of that, but the drumming thing, was that in church? Is that when you first started playing? Was it out of necessity, out of anything else, or were you drawn to the instrument?
Okay. My brother had a snare in the house. My sister had a flute. My oldest brother had a clarinet. Those were three of the five that played music in the house. So I kind of gravitated to his snare. I gravitated pretty much to everything in the house. My mother had a piano.
Mm-hmm.
So I did play piano for a while in the church. I played organ for my female group, the sisters. That was my position.
Wow. Okay.
I played organ and sung. This is what happened with the drums. One Sunday, our drummer didn't show up. Our minister of music, James Brown. His name is James Brown, for real. Fabulous guy, fabulous. Oh, my God. My home church was the beast. Mount Zion Baptist Church was the beast,
That's a famous one. I mean, that's a really well-known one.
Isaac Singleton Sr. was the pastor. Yeah. Dr. Reverend Isaac Singleton Sr. Anyway, my drummer didn't show up, and I was actually playing around on keys. And he said, I need a drummer. He said, can you keep up? You think you can keep up? I said, I can try. And I've been playing ever since.
Really? That's it? And when you started doing it, coordination-wise and stuff, started coming to you naturally?
Yeah, for some reason, it was easy. It just happened. So I just kept up with it. I tried to do some lessons and all that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just kept up with it. The church just opened doors. And that's why I say when we talk about religion and people forcing people, you don't force nobody. You lead them in the path that they need to go. And the church just opened up so many doors for me as far as playing different instruments. My father was a deacon. My mother was a deaconess. So she would be in the kitchen. My father would be in the after church, would have to stay and count money or whatever. So I had to stay at church and wait. So I would get on every instrument. Every instrument in the church, I would be on it. So I'd play piano. I would play the drums. You know, I had time because I had to wait for hours before we would go back home. So that's where the drumming came from. It came from church.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about your compositions, because you write original tunes and you write music. Now that we know all this background on you as far as all the different instruments and stuff, I always find, and I'm always curious when I'm talking to musicians who also compose and write music and write lyrics. To me, the writing of the lyrics part, if you can play, you can play, you can probably hear a melody, and then you can harmonize stuff. You get little ideas here and there. It's a, mm-hmm. a matter of, yeah, it's a whole process on how you collect it and put it down and organize it. But that lyrical thing is just another beast to try to make it make sense so that you're telling the audience the story you really want to tell them. And it's not easy through lyrics. How do you go about the process, or how did you start writing lyrics? I mean, that to me is just the hardest part of composing a lot of times.
You know.
And now you're going to tell me it's the easiest part, right? So I guess.
No, it's, I won't ever say it's easy, because you have to have some type of feeling. I've heard this saying, you don't know. Well, let's do this. When you write a song, it's like ideas just come to your mind. Or I'll do this. I'll tell you. When we're at Blue Chicago, sometimes people will walk by and say, Cheryl, such, 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 such. And I'll be like, okay, that's a song. You better watch yourself. You know, so my band is so cool that I'll say, okay, let's do something, y'all. Give me a shuffle and see. Or give me a lump in A, or give me a something in G, you know, and they'll just start planning it. So I'll just start making up stuff. And that's where it comes from, really. And then you have these thoughts. Sometimes it keeps you up at night. That's why I feel bad when they say Michael Jackson was on drugs or something like that. Yeah. Because he would always talk about, and this is real, he would always talk about the music never stops.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants to sleep for a, get an 8-hour sleep. That's all he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to tell you, I have to keep the TV on at night to sleep. Because the music doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
If music is on the TV, I have to stop and turn it off. Because mm-hmm. it'll wake me right up. So when you start thinking about songs, and I think about what Michael Jackson used to say, if I don't do this song, he's going to give it to Prince. that's no joke. You start thinking like right. that. I got to get up now and I got to do it. But here's the dilemma. You write your lyrics and you might have an idea. That's what they call it in the vault. So you start with an idea. Then you get another idea. So you still got this idea. It's not really complete. And you got another idea. Oh, my God. Then you get another idea. So you got all these ideas, and you got to sit with one or two of them and finish the idea to make a song.
Mm.
Because that idea will come to you, and it'll be kicking like, oh, my God. But you got to finish it. Then before you can finish it, you got another idea of a lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lyrics or a rhythm in your head, you know, you're
yep.
a drummer.
Yep.
So you can start with, first you might want to do a 3, and you go to a 6,
mm-hmm.
you go to a 4, mm-hmm. mess everything up. You know, just doing different things. So that's where the writing comes from, and then you just really have to sit and take time to finish your writing.
That's something, when I interviewed John Primer, I've interviewed him a couple times, but John brought that up. Because he's still writing, you know, and I mean, all the stuff he's done, he's still writing. But he brought that point up that you have to finish it. You have to sit and you have to finish it. Even if it's not that same day, you got to come back to it and finish it. You can't just leave things scattered around. And that's exactly what you're talking about. You got to finish it. And you got to keep it on top of your mind so you remember to finish it. And then, because you could end up with 30 different fragments of things. But to your point, you got to finish it.
Yeah. I'm going to do some originals for the Blues Fest, too. You know, just to do some, we're going to do some classics, and we're going to do some originals, because I believe in keeping the music alive of those who paved the way. I can write my own stuff every day, mm-hmm. all day long, but I really want to keep the music alive for those who paved the way, even if it just helps their family to see that somebody cares enough to keep their music alive. I do a lot of Etta James. I do a Coco Taylor. I do some Muddy Waters. A lot of different stuff. So we write our own songs, but we keep our classics alive as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really think there's nothing wrong with that. I like writing my own songs. I like having a whole CD of my own material. But I like to keep some of the classics alive.
I also think it's important because somebody like you, who's played with so many legends and that has been influenced by just hearing so many different genres and so many legends, you know, no matter what genre it is, I think it's interesting as an audience member to sit in the audience and hear, you know, some of those tunes and then some of your originals, because now I understand where your originals came from. I understand the background of you, even if I don't know you. Oh, mm-hmm. Gee, she's singing Etta James tune. She ain't singing a Coco Taylor tune. Now she's singing one of her tunes? Wow. Because you can hear it all, right? I mean, yeah. that's really, I think it's important. Sometimes a lot of musicians miss that, but you're right on point.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We want to, the audience is so, they are so important. They just don't know. I don't think they realize how important they are.
No.
Because when they dance, it gives us, come on now, you as a drummer, you know it excites you when people are dancing to whatever you're doing. When they're dancing and having a good time, that goes back to making a difference, even if it's just for an hour. Even if it's just for 30 minutes, making a difference in somebody's life for a little bit of time, because everybody's going through something.
Yeah.
But to write songs for people who are... I used to say this, do weddings. My dance band
did
weddings.
Sure.
And I would say, okay, well, if you want a song written just for you two, We can do that too. It's all in the, for me, it's all in the heart. And what comes from the heart reaches the heart.
Yeah. Well, this has been great. I appreciate this so much. And of course,
thank you.
I want everybody to go and check out CherylYoungbloodBand.com. And if you've not seen her in person, live and in person, she's playing all over the Chicagoland area, but obviously at the Blues Fest, if you're watching this before the Blues Fest, June 11th, 5:15 to 6:15, main stage, Sunday night. You don't want to miss that, but definitely go see her if you can't catch that somewhere else in town, because she's playing everywhere you would want to go.
Everywhere.
Cheryl, pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And as I always say, we'll have all the information at bluesfestguide.com and also chicagojazz.com. And until next time, hopefully I'll see somebody out on the scene.